This is the hot button issue of our day. It's the controversy of our day. Not just among those of us that receive text and those that are critical text, but among the received text or among the King James crowd, there are incredible amounts of controversy today. It has become the thing that we have been most distracted by. And that's serious. I don't want to talk about tonight. I want to give you 15 ideas on the proper defense of the King James Bible. Now, I'm only going to speak about 10 to 15 minutes on each one of them. Maybe it won't be quite that bad, but more like a couple minutes on each one of them. But let me tell you what the worst thing about the King James Bible is. King James Bible has been attacked and attacked and attacked for 400 years, and the attacks have never stuck. They come, you hear all about them, they're ridiculous, they fade away, that attack's gone, and another one comes. There's so much bias against the King James Bible. If somebody could write the book that genuinely discredited the King James Bible, they would be an instant millionaire. They would be preaching in big conferences all over the world. They could teach at any seminary they wanted to, but nobody's claimed that title. It's not because people haven't tried, just nobody's been able to do it. But here's what has discredited the King James Bible in the minds of many people. It's the attitude and approach of some of those who defend it. Loud, angry, emotional, self-serving, always on the attack. And over the years, the number one reason I've heard why people don't use the King James Bible. Number two reason is they say it's hard to understand. That's been dealt with already. The number one reason is people are offended by some of the folks promoting the King James Bible. That's our danger. There is a right way to do this and a wrong way to do this. And very quickly, if you would look with me at 2 Timothy, I hope you're all excited and all pumped up by the things you've heard the last 2 days, and you're just ready to share that with people and love them and help them with the truth. But if we're not careful, we become mean and angry about it. And we do more harm than good. If you look with me, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24. And the servant of the Lord must not strive. Did you get the idea that's not a request? It said, you must not strive. But be gentle unto all men. Apt to teach, patient. In meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. If God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. Now, the whole concept there is that we're supposed to have the right attitude even when we're dealing with people that have it wrong. I mentioned to you this morning, when I was first exposed to this, it was by a preacher who heard me say something foolish in a room with about 8 preachers in it. I could tell by the look on his face that I had said something that didn't register right with him. He did not embarrass me in front of the other 6 men. He did not call me any names. He didn't accuse me of anything. He didn't question any of my motives. He waited till the other men were out and said, Phil, could I talk to you for a minute? Could I ask you a question? He asked me a question that he knew I wasn't going to be able to answer, but instead of lecturing me, he asked me a question. And then he gave me a book to help me get it, study it. I can promise you, if he had treated me the way I've seen so many people treated in our day, I'd have walked out of that room saying, I don't want anything to do with that King James Bible. And all over the country, we have turned people off. We have sent them to the critical text crowd. We've caused people not to want to hear this. This is a truth to rejoice in. We have God's authoritative word. Not a truth to be hidden from. And churches have been in arguments and splits and difficulties, and preachers have been in battle with one another. And I know folks who hope they never hear a message on this subject again because of what they've heard. That is not how God has instructed us to deal with issues. Kindly, gently, patiently, working with people, wanting to help people, trying to be an encouragement to people. Can I give you 15 things real quick about the proper defense of the King James Bible? Number one, you can't defend the King James Bible without obeying the King James Bible. I know folks living ungodly lives running around thinking they're spiritually superior because they carry a King James Bible while they're living those ungodly lives. You're not. If you're not obeying the King James Bible, please do everyone who loves the King James Bible a favor and shut up about it, so that you're not part of a negative testimony. Titus 2 tells us about folks who blaspheme the Word of God with ungodly lives. If you're not going to obey the King James Bible, please be quiet about it and don't do it a disservice. Number two, would you remember that everyone does not have the same information that you do? You've heard Brother Sorensen, Brother Brown, Brother Williams, that there aren't better speakers on this subject, knowing how to take these truths and put them in front of people. Brother Ziner is as good as any man I know on the practical emphasis of, now that we know what the Word of God is, let's get it in people's hands and languages around the world. You have heard some great stuff. Everyone has not heard what you've heard. These men are my friends. I've been with all of them many times. I have heard them all speak many times. And yet, it's obvious to me, even this during this conference, that they've got some things I don't have. And there's a tendency to run around thinking, you should know what I know. You should have had the same experience I've had. You should have read the same books that have been given to me. You should have had bought the same books that I bought at this conference. You should have the information I have, and I'm going to judge you by that information, when the truth is there's plenty of folks that don't have that information. It's never been in front of them. And we've got to remember that. By the grace of God, we have what we have. I consider myself blessed. I have got to be acquainted with and friends with many of the greatest defenders of the King James Bible and the received text that exist. I feel incredibly blessed. If I have a question, I got all kinds of people to email or to call or to ask. I've read their books and just been so blessed with an abundance of information. Everybody doesn't have that. Maybe they're going to get some of those books next week, but they haven't read them yet. I can't hold you accountable for the information you have not received yet. And I'm going to tell you, we've talked today about some of the motives, what we feel to be the obvious motives of people that produce these bad translations. Can I tell you this? There are lots of people out there using bad translations who do not mean to be insulting to God. They do not mean to be disobedient. They do not mean to create a problem. They do not mean to attack the integrity of God's words in any way. They just don't know. It's fine to hold the people who produce them accountable and responsible. I've got no trouble with that. But all over this country, there are preachers who think they're doing the right thing when they go into the pulpit with bad translations. Attacking them will never get them away from those translations. We've got an obligation to help them, to encourage them. If your church is anything like mine, new people come in all the time that don't have a King James Bible. I don't blast them, and they've never heard me blast folks who don't understand this from the pulpit. I will talk to them. I'll try to help them. To start with, we go this route. We say, you know, we always use the King James Bible here, and we know it's easiest for everybody to be reading the same Bible. And since that's not your carrying, let us give you a King James Bible. Okay? And if you ever have any questions about it, let me know, and we can talk about this down the road. Number three, there's a difference between not understanding the King James issue and being against the King James Bible. Instead, some people are consciously against it. We've talked with them. We sort of cleaned their clock over the last 2 days. That's fine. But there's a lot of people who just don't know. I was sitting having lunch with the president of the Chicago Bible Society. He's not a theologian. He's a businessman that was made president of the Bible Society because he's really good at raising money. And we were sitting at lunch talking, and he didn't even know there were two Greek texts. Had no idea. And we got talking, he said, we would support, all we want to do is get the Bible out. He said, wouldn't matter whether it was critical text or received text. I said, really? He said, yeah, give me a project to support. So I hate to break this to you, but I will cash anybody's check. There's no strings attached to it. I immediately went and found about a good Receive Tech project that needed funding and told him about it. And he said, we'll fund it. And then, of course, he checked with the leadership of the American Bible Society at the national level just to make sure, and the whole thing died, which was kind of what I was expecting. But the man was not a rebel against the Receive Text. No one in his experience, he grew up in a church that was critical text. The people that recruited him for this position were critical text. Nobody had ever told him anything about it. You don't deal with that person the same way you deal with the person who is an express stated enemy of the King James Bible. I am not afraid to fight this issue with the people that hate the King James Bible. But I don't want to fight it with the brethren that haven't been blessed the way I have been blessed and haven't had the information that I have had. Number four, remember this. At most, you're the pastor of one church. And a number of you aren't the pastor of any church. God has not called me to go into other pastors' churches and correct their ministry. He hasn't called you to either. It is something to be ashamed of if we are trouble in a church because the church does not understand this issue yet. We ought to be interested in reaching the pastor, praying for the pastor, helping the pastor, putting good information in the pastor's hands, but God didn't call us to tear up anybody else's church, whether they got this or not. You're only a pastor one church. Very rare that I get invited to preach in a church that doesn't hold our position. But I have one very close friend. He doesn't hold our position. He's actually written a book against our movement. He quoted me repeatedly in the book without using my name. We are good friends. But he asked me to come in and preach on missions. Now, I'm really glad when churches that do not understand this invest money in missionaries and they take the gospel around the world. So I came, went to his church. His people were shocked I was coming because they knew who the quotes came from. Okay? And they were, you could hear a pin drop in a place, man. They wondered what was going to happen and what I was going to do. So I got up in a pulpit and I said, I want you to know I'm really offended with your pastor. Well, I went quiet. I said, he should have dedicated that book to me. He couldn't have written it without me. So he should have dedicated that book to me, and he didn't say a single word. And then I went on and preached about missions. And they increased their missions giving. And I'm glad they did. I didn't pastor that church. I'd love it if he asked me to come in their church and do a conference on this. I'd be thrilled to death. If he said, let's hear the other side conference, I'd be thrilled to go. But that's not what he invited me for. And I do not go into somebody else's church and ever knowingly be a problem in that church. I've only been called to pastor one church. Ask me, invite me, and I love to come talk about this anywhere, in any setting, in any circumstances. I was thrilled for us to have the opportunity to come here and do this. But I don't go in anybody else's church and talk about this and try and create a problem or be a difficulty because I'm not called to pastor that church. Number five, treat the brethren as brethren, not as enemies. The folks that don't get this, that have trusted Christ as their Savior, are still my brothers and sisters in Christ. I am not their enemy. We cannot always work together. We cannot always do things together because I just can't be part. You know, if I'm sitting in service and a guy thinks that in order to preach, he's got to spend 17 minutes correcting the King James Bible and 3 minutes preaching the gospel, I get just to be so uncomfortable that it's not the place for me to be. The circumstances are often uncommon when I'm not able to fellowship with folks just because of this issue. But I don't think the Christian that misunderstands this issue is a cultist or a modernist or a Catholic. They are brothers and sisters in Christ. They deserve to be treated like brothers and sisters in Christ. By the way, this is on another topic. So do we. I get amazed at the people who complain about how mean and rude defenders of the King James Bible are, who are themselves mean and rude to everybody that uses the King James Bible. That's for free. It's not one of the 15. Number six, make helpful material available to people in a kind way. Brother, could I share this with you? Pastor, do you have this book? And if you're talking to a pastor that doesn't take the King James position, it's a pretty good bet he doesn't have any of Brother Williams' books or any of Brother Brown's or Brother Sorensen's books. Could I make a gift to you, something that I think you would be encouraged if you read? Give them the chance and the opportunity to get it. The person that helped me see this handed me a copy of Wilbur Pickering's Identity of the New Testament Text. I had never read anybody refute Westcott and Hort before. I had no such information in front of me. I went home and devoured that book. Since then, to be completely honest, I don't even think it's in the top 20 books on the subject. But I'd never read it before. I'd never read what was in there before. It wasn't at a fraction as clear as Brother Sorensen's books are, for example. I mean, you help somebody. Give them something that'll be good for them. Give them something that'll help them. Give them something that'll help them see it. Call them names and you will just drive them harder into their position. Be their friend. Give them something to help them. Number 7, state your position clearly. There is a tendency among some folks to be vague and unclear because they want to get along with everybody and they want to get support from everybody. They want to get money from everybody. And so they leave everybody constantly wondering what their position is. And I promise you, down the road, that will backfire on you. This guy will think you agreed with them, and this guy will think you agreed with them, and they have completely different positions, and sooner or later, they're going to have a conversation about you. Just be who you are. State your position clearly and let other people figure out what it is they want to do about it. It is not right to be in any sense deceptive about who we are and what we believe. Number 8. Respond graciously to gracious disagreements. You will find some folks along the way who can actually debate this subject without rancor or bitterness or anger. I've had gracious conversations with Dr. Riken, the man behind the English Standard Version Bible, and I disagree completely with his choice of text and what they did with it. He's written books and he's an expert on actual literal translation. If you ever want to thoroughly know what a bad text says, get his English Standard Version Bible. It is the literal translation of a corrupt text. I've had gracious conversations with him. He's never called me any names for believing what I believe. He's very conscious of the fact that we disagree. But he'll ask me a few questions gently. I'll ask him a few questions gently. Nobody gets hurt in the process, and this is why this is important to me. Imagine somebody that's played the role he has in producing a corrupt translation. Do you know how our crowd normally speaks to him? Okay. The way he gets jumped on, the names he gets called. There's no mistake about my position, but we need to respond graciously to gracious disagreements, and folks ought to be able to have kind and gracious conversations one with another. That's not always possible. Yeah. Roman numeral 9, or point 9, respond strongly to strong disagreements. There does come a time to draw a line in the sand and take a stand. There does come a time to answer. Would you go with me to Proverbs chapter 26, verse 4 and 5? And people who take the position you've heard the last couple days and who write about it and who talk about it, there's something we all have to get used to. We get attacked. Now with the invention of the internet, we get attacked and get attacked on the internet all the time, every day. There's a whole list of names. My secretaries at church are told, if you see an email from that name, delete it. Said, if those people call, just tell them you'll tell the pastor they called. Don't tell them I'll call them back. I'm not going to spend all my time fighting with foolish, rude, obnoxious people. But if you look at Proverbs chapter 26, verse 4, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be likened to him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. That passage bothers some folks, but the message is real simple. There are times to answer and times not to answer. Okay? I am not the least bit embarrassed about the position that I hold. I am not the least bit embarrassed about being associated with people that hold this position. I am not the least bit intimidated by people who say, you know, Phil, you'd sound so much more scholarly if you just didn't do this King James stuff. Okay? I am not intimidated by the fact that there are some folks who think I must be a dummy. You get attacked from all edges. There's a video on the internet now entitled The Lunacy of Phil Stringer. And that's actually from one of our people. But entitled The Lunacy of Phil Stringer. And I was telling my folks about it. And I said, none of you need to watch it because y'all knew already. I mean, this isn't new to the folks who've sat under me for years. People keep asking me my response to it. I said, I've never watched it. People thought I hadn't watched it because I couldn't have the chance. So many people have sent it to me. I still haven't watched it. I just had the idea from the title I wasn't going to have a fair, rational conversation with this person. I mean, one of two things. I'm either the lunatic he says I am, in which there's no point in my bothering him and taking up his time, or he's not being very honest and objective in looking at it, in which case there's no point in him bothering me and taking up my time. Okay? But sometimes you have to draw a line in the sand and answer. I've had families come into our church since I've been pastor. They say, oh, Brother Stringer, we love your preaching so much, and we love the friendliness of the people, and you know, it's right here in our neighborhood, and we just someday we hope the church will get up to speed on this King James thing and use a better Bible. I'm sorry, you folks are in the wrong place. Because that's not happening unless I die suddenly. And you shouldn't be in a church where you're longing for the pastor to die suddenly. That doesn't make any sense. You found the wrong place. Chicago is full of churches that don't use the King James Bible. There must be a much better place for you to worship. Okay? Sometimes you have to stand strongly and defend the truth when it's under attack, no matter what the consequences are, no matter who understands, or no matter what the difficulty is. I've looked to some people and said, you know, anybody can be in our services that is not disruptive, and you're welcome in the service. But if you come from membership in our church, our constitution requires the pastor give a recommendation, yes or no, on prospective members. And I'm going to tell the church my recommendation is no, because you're not just uninformed on the King James issue, you're anti-King James, and that is not this church. In 1934, our blue-collar factory workers held up King James Bible and stared down seminary professors and said, you can't teach that here. Stories told that during the times of that discussion, the pastor was reading off some quotes from folks that were modernists. And somebody missed the beginning of the service, and they came in, and all they heard was him saying all this modernistic stuff. They stood up and said, nobody can say that in this pulpit. Nobody's going to preach that here. There are moments. Now, you might want to make sure you got in on time and know what you're talking about. But there are moments when you just have to stand strong, no matter what the difficulty is, no matter what the disagreement is, and say, this is what we stand for. And that's that. Number 10, prepare people for the battle. Had a friend pastored in central Illinois. Great man. He pastored the same church for 46 years, from age 40 to age 86. Anybody that ever went and preached for him, and I went and preached for him more than once, got a letter ahead of time saying, we use the King James Bible here. Please don't use anything else. Please don't disagree with the King James Bible. Please don't correct the King James Bible. That's not welcome in our pulpit. It was very politely stated, but it was crystal clear. But it was also his position that he did not want to address this issue to his people, so controversial, and they knew people that were mean and people that were negative, and he did not want his people to have to be involved in this issue, so he enforced a very strict policy as pastor, controlled what was done in the pulpit, but he never taught his people anything about this issue. When he was 86, he had a massive heart attack. It was obvious in the first couple of days he would never recover to full form. So he had called the deacons of the hospital and said, I form a pulpit committee. I'm not going to ever be able to function as a pastor again. Form a pulpit committee. Start looking for a pastor. These were good men. They'd never heard anything but the King James preached from or used in their church. But they'd never been taught why. He was in the hospital for 3 months. Before he got out of the hospital, the pastor had called a new pastor who came in his first week and said, we can't reach people today using the King James Bible. I want all the King James Pew Bibles out and put in new NIV Pew Bibles on his first Sunday as pastor. And nobody understood what was going on. For long, he turned a church of 300 into a church of 100. But that whole church became a NIV church. Because they had never been taught, and so the deacons didn't know any questions to ask, And they weren't prepared for any of this, and the people weren't prepared. They just knew something was wrong, but didn't know what it was or how it got that way. You've got to teach people this. That's why churches have to have meetings like this. It is the battle of the day. It is the hot button issue of the day. Churches have to be prepared. If something happened to the pastor, churches have to be able to come to grips with this. Right? We just have to. Prepare. You got to prepare people for the battle. Huh? It's not what people don't know. It's all the things they know that aren't so that will get you in trouble. Number 11. Don't let anybody equate themselves with the King James Bible. People will come along and say, if you believe in the King James Bible, you'll buy my books. If you believe in the King James Bible, you'll have me speak in your church. If you believe in the King James Bible, you'll belong to my organization. If you believe in the King James Bible, you'll do this, that, or the other. Nobody's on that level. Nobody is the defender of the King James Bible. It doesn't need a the defender. Nobody is the promoter of the King James Bible. It doesn't need us. And all over the country, there are teachers who want to be the man on the King James Bible subject. One of them is even a woman that wants to be the man on the King James Bible subject. And they want to have control of it. And they want to demand, if you're King James Bible, you personally support them. Don't let anybody do that to you. The King James Bible is bigger than any of us. It has been attacked from the moment it came out for over 400 years by people who were determined to destroy it and replace it. And did you know it survived a long time before you and I came along? Are you ready? We want to help as many people as we can. But if none of us here were in this battle, it would still survive. Doesn't have to have us. Maybe we can help somebody along the way, and that'll be a good thing. But I'm telling you, it doesn't have to have us. None of us, nor anybody else, is that important. If the King James Bible Research Council died tomorrow, the King James Bible would still survive. There are lots of people that have never heard of us that love the King James Bible. If we can help some people along the way, that's great. And if we can increase the number, that's wonderful. And if we can answer some questions, that's fine. But neither we nor anybody else deserves a special relationship with the King James Bible. None of us are the man. The King James Bible did pretty good before we got here. And it'll survive real fine when we're gone. Okay. Do not personalize this issue. I can't support the King James Bible because that guy is so terrible. Have you ever heard how mean he is to people? I can't support the King James Bible because this lady is so foolish in the things she says. Forget her, forget him, it's the book. By the same token, don't say, I'm going to be loyal to the King James Bible because this person is. What if that person messes up tomorrow? Don't personalize this. Don't equate anybody with the King James Bible. It's not about who's defending it, who's promoting it, or about who's attacking it. Let the truth stand for itself. Number 12, don't play politics. I know folks that are for the King James Bible when this group over here, they have some questions about it when they're with this group over here. And they don't know what this group here stands for, and so they're not going to take any position until they do. This is not about politics. Be who you are, stand for what you stand for, be friends to who you can be friends, but simply be what you are. Politics has been the curse of the Fundamental Baptist ministry in the last 20 years. I know several men who are on more than one side of this issue. And they not only don't help everybody, they don't help anybody. By the way, you don't help yourselves, because sooner or later people will figure that out. A lot of Bible colleges in our day trying to be on every side of this issue, because they want students from every side of this issue, and they want contributions from every side of this issue. There are mission boards that are trying to be on every side of this issue. They'll find out who you are and what you stand for before they answer any of your questions. You were talking about getting to know where some of the mission boards were. I had a class project several years ago when I taught at Landmark Baptist College. And I had everybody in the missions class called Missionary Problems. and something else in the title. But anyway, it's about dealing with difficult situations. And so I had all of the students write the mission boards, all the Independent Baptist mission boards we could find, and ask what their position on Bible translation was. But I had some of the students pretend to be from one side, and some of the students pretend to be from the other side. Yeah. You want to guess how most of our answers went? From the same mission boards? Thought about publishing that and then decided I'd spend the rest of my life having to beat up on those people. And after a while, I decided not to do that. Don't play politics. Just be who you are. Be kind and gracious to all the brethren. Let the brethren figure out what they want to do with you. Okay. Don't play politics. Don't play, I'm more King James Bible than you are with your fellow King James believers. There's a bunch of folks doing that. They want to find some little wrinkle, some little twist, some little question. They say, see, I'm more King James Bible than you are. And that has gone on so long and so much that it's amazing the stupid things people have come up with to try and mark as fundamental issues. And it's brought so much difficulty and so much problem. I'm not just talking about the battle. You sort of understand it's been around for a while. Battle between received text and critical text. That's just sort of a natural battleground. There are so many angles and strains and groups and cliques on the King James side. So many of whom are trying to... Nobody else is really King James but us. I mean, we're the real King James guys. And they got some little angle that they have read into the situation, are placed in it, and sometimes it's really bizarre, and they tend to something really bizarre because they want to find something that nobody but themselves and a few of their friends believe, so they can say, we're the only guys. For example, there's a crowd today very adamant that the King James Bible was inspired on the day of Pentecost and not translated from the Greek and Hebrew. Now, I'll admit, they've managed to set themselves aside from everybody. And in their mind, they are the only King James Bible believers there are. But the strange thing about that is if you read what was written by the King James translators, they will tell you about translating from Greek and Hebrew. It's amazing they didn't know that. Okay? They didn't know what this group knows. They didn't know what this group has made a fundamental of the faith. That's a more bizarre example, I'll admit. But there's all kinds of little angles on this where people want to say, you say you're King James, but you're not really King James. Only the people that believe this one little bizarre thing that I thought up are really King James. Don't play I'm more King James than you are. That does not help the cause of the King James Bible by any stretch of the imagination. Number 14, study carefully before you talk. Do you know it's the nature of Independent Baptists that once we've said something publicly, we desperately don't want to admit that was wrong? Well, one thing you've heard today from some of the men here is that they once held, and it's true about me, they once held the other position, and the day came when we figured out the things we had said publicly were wrong, and then we had to humble ourselves and say we were wrong. By the way, Independent Baptists are not good at this. We're not very practiced at it. My wife reacts in shock if she ever hears an Independent Baptist preacher admit they made a mistake. Study carefully before you get yourself out on the limb on the record. Some King James Bible defenders have hurt themselves with foolish statements. And then when people challenge these incorrect statements, they don't want to admit they're wrong, but there's no way they can defend that they were right. And so they just tend to call people names. You can really hurt yourself on this subject. There's lots of information out there that is not sound and not reliable. And you can just repeat it and embarrass yourself and make a fool out of yourself in front of everybody. The example I just gave, I've seen this happen to people. Guy gets up and says, well, Hebrew and Greek, God never used any Hebrew and Greek. The King James Bible folks that produced the King James Bible never saw any Hebrew and Greek. Okay. And somebody brings in translating the King James Bible by Ward Allen, one of the translators. And it describes the experience. Or the statement by John Selden that came up last night, which describes how they went about it. And then that particular preacher was proven, actually by a teenager in his congregation, was proven to be completely wrong. But he wasn't about to be corrected by a teenager. So he ranted and raved and called the teenager names. And no matter what he said, nothing could change the fact the teenager was right. And he had done something foolish by picking up something he heard and repeating it. By the way, the critical text crowd does this all the time. They say the most bizarre things. And they're just repeating something they heard from somebody. And somebody brings something to them. I don't know how many critical text guys I've heard say that King James translators really didn't have any qualifications for what they did. And then you begin to look at the record. One of them used to teach a Greek class. He's a college professor. He taught a voluntary Greek class at 4 o'clock in the morning for 4 hours until 8 o'clock. And it was always full. You had to wait to get your chance to participate. Who do you know that can teach Greek that will draw college students out at 4 o'clock in the morning? I mean, I have heard so many absolutely foolish statements that on both sides that a little bit of research would strip away. Study a little bit before you start saying things. Before you start answering questions. Before you start putting yourself in front of the public. If you've studied hard, it's still easy enough to make a mistake. If you don't study, mistakes are about all you're going to make. Study carefully. Number 15. Don't fight each other over the definitions of words. We have in our independent Baptist movement a virtual civil war because some people give one definition to the word inspired and some people give another definition. When if you examine what they're saying, they're actually saying the same thing. Now, I'm absolutely positive my definition is right. And so if you have the other definition, you're just wrong and silly and stupid and arrogant and uneducated. But you know, if you look up the word inspired in a Webster's dictionary, you'll find both definitions. Now, I think one definition fits the description of biblical truth better than the other definition. I really do. But the truth is, both the definitions are in Webster's dictionary. And the truth is, a lot of the men are basically saying the same thing. And yet we're killing one another. We've pulled missionaries off the field over this. Bible colleges have done dramatic drops in attendance over this. Preachers have been at war with one another whose doctrine wasn't really different over this. And did you know the Bible is clear that we are not to have warfare over the definition of words? There's a principle called polysemy. Mentioned it this morning. Words have more than one meaning in many languages. Okay? It's not true in every language. The comedian Yakov Smirnov has a whole comedy routine on this. In Russian, words have only one meaning. He came over here from Russia, first moved to the United States, was doing well, the comedy circuit, went out and bought his first American car, said he got in the car and a light came on and the light said, "The door is ajar." He said he thought that was the dumbest thing he'd ever seen in his entire life. Even with his limited command of English, he knew what a jar was and he knew what a door was and he was absolutely positive a door was not a jar. All kinds of words. Have you ever tried talking to teenagers? There's a whole new computer vocabulary, and they have words that are the same words you have, but the definition of those words is completely different. Let's not beat each other up over the definition of a word. Surely I can find enough grace in my heart to forgive you if you don't use the word the way I think is the very best way to use it. And maybe you ought to find something in your heart to forgive somebody over that. We're killing each other. We're destroying our independent Baptist movement. And some of it, I will admit, is a battle over doctrine. But some of it is just warfare over definitions of words. God help us. Is that worth it? Is the price we're paying? Young preachers are abandoning the independent Baptist movement right now. And left. all the time. I just heard this week about one of my former students who has done that, and for this very reason, they're tired of all the fighting over nonsense and silliness. I understand some things have to be fought over. But we are sending independent Baptist, young independent Baptist preachers. Most of us are just so old, we're not capable of changing now, and that's the only thing that holds us in place. But we're sending independent Baptist preachers, young ones, to the new evangelical movement, to the contemporary church movement, right and left. And I know it's their fault for not seeing things more clearly, but maybe it wouldn't happen so much if we didn't push them that direction. So we may want to get mad at them for falling off the cliff, but it might have helped if we hadn't pushed. We're losing our movement in meaningless debates among ourselves, often over the King James Bible, that don't go any deeper than the definitions of words. That's not the plan of God. That's not how to defend the King James Bible. The cause of the King James Bible is not made better when we make fools out of ourselves. The King James Bible has survived all of its enemies. I only hope it survives its friends and its defenders and its promoters. All the people trying to attack the King James Bible can't lay a glove on it. 401 years of nonstop attacks, and look where it is. But there are people abandoning it because they're so offended by the people who defend it and promote it. God help us. Would you go back with me to 2 Timothy? I will be done in just a second. I want to read the passage we started with one more time in light of the things that we have looked at. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24. And the servant of the Lord should not strive. It's not what it says, does it? Doesn't say, it would be better if the servant of the Lord did not strive. What does our King James Bible tell us? What is the King James word? Must not strive. But be gentle unto some men. Be gentle unto those that do us the least damage. Be gentle when we're having a good day. Be gentle when we're not really that deeply offended. I don't know about you, but I have trouble with this. I'm not telling you I obey this easily. Okay. All those passages again, but vengeance is mine, thus saith the Lord. I've been looking for translation that redid that verse to my satisfaction. Something like that, yeah, would be good. This was really my version. Vengeance is mine, thus saith the Lord, and I've delegated to people in full-time Christian service. That's what I was really looking for. Who knows? If I find the translation that says that, I might abandon this whole movement. Must not strive, but be gentle unto all men. Apt to teach. We criticize folks for not knowing, but what we're supposed to be apt to teach. We're supposed to be able to show them. Apt to teach. You ready? Patient. When I was living here in Florida, I was thinking about it coming over here. I was driving down 27 one time to preach, and my wife and my son, who was about that time, was about seventh grade. And I'm going somewhere, and my son said, "What are you preaching on, Dad?" I said, "Patience." He said, "Not going to be one of those sermons with a lot of illustrations, is it?" Patient. What happens if somebody doesn't get this the first time we tell them? Or the first time we hand them a book? Or the first time we speak on this? What do we do if they don't get it the first time? Is it time then to rip them up? We're supposed to be what? Patient. Keep teaching the truth. Keep standing for the truth. Keep making the point. And be patient. Give people time to catch up with you. In meekness. God help me, I'm not going to tell you I've always been innocent of this. I have heard more loud arrogance in the promotion of the King James Bible than any subject I can mention to you. But we're supposed to, in meekness, instruct those. In meekness. There hasn't been a lot of meekness in this debate over the King James Bible in independent Baptist circles. And I'm going to tell you right now, one of the reasons we're losing young preachers right and left is they hear the words, but the words come to their ears, but the arrogance behind the words come to their hearts. And they get it. And they don't want to be part of it. Doing so, they often make a mistake. Because I'm going to promise you, the critical text crowd is filled with arrogance. But they are a little smoother how they say it. And so you might be around them for a while before you get it. I promise you, there are a lot of movements holding up the King James Bible where pride and arrogance mean far more than the words of the King James Bible in everything that's done. God help us. We have a great truth. One we never have a reason to be embarrassed over. One we can lift up loudly and help people win it with it. It helps people when they realize there really is an absolute standard for their life. We can be an encouragement. The arguments of Westcott and Hort and Tischendorf and Nida and going back to Eusebius and Origen, though their arguments can be refuted and refuted very clearly and frankly very easily. But God help us that we defend the King James Bible the right way and that we not be guilty of doing more harm than good. Thank you all so much for having us in and having this conference.